JC Corcoran Podcast.
Here at the new Busch Stadium in downtown St. Louis, and it looks like it's just about time to sing the national anthem.
That's right, Joe. And singing tonight is Pamela Bell, winner of local grocery store Schnucks Anthem Idol Contest.
I hear the girl can sing.
Well, let's go to the field.
Ladies and gentlemen, here tonight to honor our country by singing the national anthem, please welcome Pamela Bell.
The what? Soap or a hobby, we
yeah. That's right.
Let's blame me. The who's brought the stripes and right roars. Oh, the ramrods we watched. And the rockets, red glare, the bombs bursting up in the air. Give a little boo. Through the night. Let us make a film. For it's one, two, need to track your out. And
just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
We got us a new month. It is the 1st of June, 2022, 160 days remaining in our American democratic system of government, as we have known. How are you doing, kids? You are at jconthewine.com. I've had a series of technical snafus this morning trying to get the podcast on, so now I'm rushing. So if I make lots of stupid mistakes and say stupid things, that will be the reason why. It's always good to have somebody or something to blame for your ineptitude. All right. A little fun at the old ballpark last night. Cardinals are winning. Cardinals are tied. Late innings. Heroics. send the game into extra innings, and then Yachty and Waino and Albert and the rest is history. Good night, Irene. Cards win, and you got that big weekend series against the Cubs this weekend at Wrigley Field, and normally I'd be excited about it. Normally I would be there, but in this particular case, I have no idea who the hell is playing for the Cubs. Kyle Hendricks pitches, and Wilson Contreras catches, and beyond that, I don't think I know anybody on the team anymore. I mean, in all seriousness, last year when they sold off all those players, like Rizzo and stuff, it really felt like the team plane had crashed or something. Because one minute you're watching all these guys that you've been, you know, going back to the World Series year and everything like that. And then all of a sudden they're all gone. And you're like, well, who the hell is playing? And almost like that time during the strike where they were threatening to use replacement players. Because they did that in football. And you're like, well, it's the same uniforms and it's the same game and they seem to know how to play, but I don't know who anybody is. And that's when you realize that professional sports really is star driven. Yes, hockey is a fascinating sport to watch, especially live. Football has its appeal. Major League Baseball, I still think, is the best game ever invented. And there's so many, you know, things that make it a great game, but you still have to know who's playing. I was thinking about this the other day. Mike Shannon always used to say, Abner Dunning, old Abner Dunning again. But it really is true, and particularly with regard to the drop third strike. Just think about that. It's almost diabolical when you really, really think about the sensation, the event, the drop third strike. Pitcher does everything right. Pitcher does everything right. Gets the guy to strike out, but the ball gets past the catcher. And now, by doing absolutely nothing, the hitter gets to try to make it to first base. But the ball is usually 70 feet behind home plate, rolling around because it was either a wild pitch or a pass ball. For some reason, the guy swung at it. And now the catcher is running around behind home plate, trying to track down the ball, which is usually bounced off the bricks, and now going to try to make a throw, an accurate throw to first base from well behind home plate in most cases. But you have that terrible angle because first baseman is standing there. The catcher is not in his normal position, and here comes a runner, by the way. And it's like, uh-oh, this doesn't look good. Because it looks like everybody, two big slabs of meat are just going to collide over at first base. How the hell did Abner Doubleday figure out that in the Major League Baseball rules, he had to include the drop third strike? There's great stories about baseball. People who love baseball watch it every day. They still don't know where some of the stuff came from. Sometimes you will hear reference to boys. Let's see, that would be 16, 17, 18 years old, playing in something called the Connie Mack League. And on occasion, you'll hear that name, Connie Mack. And you're like, well, why was he such a big deal? Well, because prior to Connie Mack, back in the early 1900s, pitcher would wind up and throw, and the catcher was like 30 feet behind home plate. And Connie Mack said, well, let's get some tools of ignorance here, as they refer to them, catcher's mask and shin guards and all this sort of stuff, and let's put him immediately behind the hitter, and then the umpire goes behind him, and the rest is history. Connie Mack was the guy who came up with that concept for Major League Baseball. Players as late as at least the 40s, maybe even the early 1950s, used to share gloves and mitts. Shortstop, third out of the inning, and he would just drop his glove at shortstop, run into the dugout, and the shortstop from the other team would come out and pick up the glove, and he would use that glove. And, you know, if you go to the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, and I recommend that for everybody, and you got to do it right, by the way. You got to go at least 2 days. You got to go 2 days. There's so much to see. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, you can probably do in 1 day. It would be a very long day, and then you got to set aside at least an hour or two just for the gift shop. Calling it a shop is a joke. It's the size of a Dick's Sporting Goods. And they just have everything from a, $3.99 lighter to wall hangings and artwork that costs thousands of dollars. But when you go to Cooperstown, you see some of the baseball gloves and mitts that they used as, like I said, as late as the 1940s, even the early 1950s. And they're not exactly well-crafted. And that's why it's ridiculous to talk about who the greatest player was of all time, because you have various eras. Trust me, Brooks Robinson, great third baseman for the Baltimore Orioles, Hall of Famer, if he was using the same glove that somebody like, you know, Lou Boudreau was using back in the 30s and 40s, I don't think he'd be putting up defensive numbers the way he did that got him into the Hall of Fame. Would have been a great player, but you can't, you know, snag a 110-mile-an-hour shot down the third baseline. You dive, and instead of a glove like we have today, or that Brooks Robinson had in the 60s and 70s, you're basically using an oven mitt. Good luck with that. It's a goofy Tommy Pham story. When the Cardinals lost Tommy Pham, I remember thinking to myself, I don't know. I don't know if I would have gotten rid of him. And then, you know, he's down in Tampa. And he's playing for his new team the other day and runs out in the outfield before the game. Players are all just shagging flies, batting practice going on. And the next thing you know, Tommy Pham bitch slaps one of his teammates. Does like a Will Smith, Chris Rock thing. And almost a fight breaks out, as you might expect. And the players are being separated. They're like, what the hell is going on between you two guys? And Tommy Pham says, he insulted my fantasy football team. Like, oh, okay, well, at least you had a good reason. What the fuck was that? And then you start digging around a little more and you find out Tommy Pham really does not have a good reputation in the league. I mean, he just doesn't. Which means you got to be pretty bad because Major League Baseball players are scoundrels. I love the game and I love the athleticism and everything like that, but I was way too close to Major League Baseball for a lot of years and saw things that made me realize that I was living in a fantasy world. And I've said this before, I mean it. Some of the guys in the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, the worst of all of them. I've talked about this before. Back in the 80s. Back in the 80s, there was a Cardinal relief pitcher whose name you would recognize immediately. He had, in fact, an offspring that also became famous locally. But this guy won, I guess you would say, a team contest back in the 80s because he had the greatest, largest number of women on the road. We should, I suppose, point out that he was married with family, and but he was getting it done on the road. 3 o'clock in the morning on one of the road trips in Chicago, as a matter of fact, because the Cubs and the Cardinals play this weekend. That's what we were just talking about at Wrigley Field. And I saw a particular Cardinal ball player from the mid to late 80s, get on an elevator at 3 o'clock in the morning with not one but two women of, shall we say, ill repute. Hell, we know the stories about Babe Ruth. He'd go on the road, and his roommate said, I never saw the babe on road trips. I saw his suitcase. He'd go to the hotel, drop his suitcase, and I wouldn't see him again except for the games. I told him the time we flew out almost simultaneously out to Los Angeles back in 1985 with the team plane. In other words, the Cardinals took off and then we took off. We got there about 20 minutes early. We got our tape recorders. We're standing there in the lobby of the hotel waiting for the guys to come in. And uncharacteristically, they blew right past us and went straight to the elevator and up to their rooms. And they're like, well, what the hell was that? These guys know who we are and they know what we do. And we're getting blown off. And so we're standing there commiserating. And about 20 minutes later, all the guys start coming back down and heading out in front of the hotel, grabbing cabs and disappearing. This is like maybe 10 o'clock at night. We found out that Hugh Hefner had invited the Cardinals to the Playboy Mansion, you know, to have a late night snack. And we're like, oh, okay. I mean, on one hand, it made me feel better because we knew so many of the guys. We just couldn't believe they were blowing us off. We get all the way to Los Angeles, and they're like, they won't talk to us. And then you realize, oh, something else going on here. And by the way, not that there's anything wrong with any of that. I mean, I suppose you could make the case that if a guy was married with a family and all this was going on, his wife probably didn't know about it. Like they say, what happens on the road? Oh, speaking of the Cubs, they have an infielder by the name of Jonathan Villar. And so he was using those exercise bands they are very, very popular with the athletes because you can take them on the road. You can take them anywhere. You can use them anywhere. You can sit on a four-hour flight from St. Louis to Los Angeles. And, you know, if you feel like flexing, you go ahead and you do it. And they're, you know, great invention. And they provide lots of resistance, sort of like the flight attendants. Good morning, everybody. And Jonathan Villar, the Chicago Cubs, is using one of those exercise bands the other day. And the thing, well, the way this... the way the team describes it is the funniest part about this, because apparently the thing snapped back, right? I don't think it broke. I think it was operator error, you know? The thing snaps back, hits him in the face, and all the team has said so far is that he will be on the IL, the injured reserve, you know, for quite a while because he needs, and this is a quote, extensive dental work. Extensive dental work. So it just didn't hit him in the face, and it's like, oh, it's so embarrassing. You dummy, look what you did. He can't play, and not only need, it's not like he chipped a tooth. He needs extensive dental work. Have a nice day. And I don't intend to turn this into an entire baseball show, but it's just such a lot of things that happened today that were baseball-oriented, and one of them goes back to 1977. Now, to be able to hear this story told the right way and to really, really get it full force, you have to be there in person when Bob Costas is telling it. And this is a recording I've played a couple of times before, and it's a true story. And if you're on that, you know, off-season rubber chicken circuit where they have all the banquets, like in January and February and Knights of the Cauliflower Ear and the baseball writers and all that sort of stuff, you know, 700 guys sitting around chewing on cigars, telling old war stories and talking about baseball and giving out awards, can't think of anything less interesting. So this is like a little, this is your eavesdropping on this now, okay? You're eavesdropping. And not only is this a great story told by Bob Costas, but then we have a little surprise for you at the end, the actual recording of what Bob is talking about, which was sent to me by the son of Bob Starr, who is the subject of this particular story. And for those of you who are around way back in the day, Bob Starr was one of the radio broadcasters for the Cardinals Radio Network, did the Cardinals games along with Jack Buck and with Mike Shannon. Again, 1977. Bob?
One of the questions that the people who are in our business are always asked is about on-air bloopers. You know, I'm sure that, all of you have your own horror stories that maybe you can look back on and laugh sometime later where you got tongue-tied or you said something where a double entendre wasn't intended, but that meaning was definitely taken. I've been involved in a few. I was on the air three or four years ago doing the Saturday game of the week with Tony Kubek in Toronto. And at that time, Tommy John was bouncing from team to team. And he'd just been released by the Angels, and Oakland had signed him. And Oakland's playing the Blue Jays, and there's Tommy John sitting in the dugout for the first time in an Oakland uniform, but they hadn't technically activated him yet because they were going to send him to the minor leagues just to get some work in to get his arm in shape. So we're in the middle of the game, and the camera settles upon Tommy John, and I try to think of an appropriate caption to write beneath the picture there, and I say, well, there's Tommy John. He'll be in the Oakland rotation soon, but he needs a little work first, so he'll be pissing in Appleton on Monday. It didn't sound quite right as it came out of my mouth, and I looked at Kubek, who was a great help. He just kind of stared at me and fell silent. And so then I'm looking for the appropriate next sentence, and I say, well, Tony, come to think of it, he'll probably do both if he stays there long enough. So, and then the next week, I'm walking down the hall at NBC, and here comes Letterman, who's a big baseball fan, and he says, hey, you got a tape of the sixth inning from Saturday? I'd like it for my archives. So, but the single greatest one I've ever heard, thankfully I wasn't involved in, but I was witness to, and it happened in the summer of 1977, and this would only be tellable if it were true, and it is true 100% verbatim. 1977, midweek afternoon game, Busch Stadium in St. Louis, the Cardinals against the Cubs. At that time, the Cardinals had a three-man broadcasting team. Jack Buck, Mike Shannon, who's still there, former Cardinal player, now announcer, and a guy named Bob Starr, who went on to do the Angels games and now is in Boston doing the Red Sox. And this particular day, on a Wednesday afternoon, in front of a relatively sparse crowd, happens to be National Dairy Day at the ballpark. It's, you know, one of your big promotional days, and people flock from surrounding states to be there for the festivities. And, you know, they put up on the board, welcome members of the National Dairy Council. And then the guy from the National Dairy Council shows up in the booth to schmooze with the announcers. Now, in St. Louis, there's a two-tiered broadcast booth at Busch Stadium. The announcers are down on the lower level overlooking the field. But then there's a short flight of stairs, three or four steps up to a second level where visitors can sit. So in walks this guy from the National Dairy Council, and he sits down as Buck is announcing the game. And Buck says, well, up steps Hector Cruz. He's hitting 265, curveball in the dirt for ball one. So, Mr. Jones, have you enjoyed your visit to St. Louis? Oh, yeah, Jack, you know, up in Wisconsin, ever since the Braves left for Atlanta, we don't see much National League ball. We love the Brewers, but great to see the senior circuit. Fastball up and in, 2-0 to Hector Cruz. And the guy has brought with him a woman who is billed as Miss Cheesecake. Now, Miss Cheesecake is dressed in a one-piece white bathing suit with white high heels, like she's in a beauty pageant, and the streamer going across says, instead of Miss Wisconsin or something, Miss Cheesecake. And she brings with her three individual boxes of cheesecake, like two sliced cheesecakes, and she presents one to each of the announcers. So she sashays down the steps to great attention all over the press box. While they're announcing the game, Cruz flies to left, one down, and she places one in front of Buck, leans over with great ceremony, places another in front of Shannon, who is flabbergasted by this point, and a third in front of Starr. Guy from the National Dairy Council gets up and leaves. Ken Reitz comes to the plate, fouls one back to the screen, 0-1. Ken hitting at 275, single to right, his first time up. Buck leans across Shannon and says, hey, Bob, what do you think of Miss Cheesecake? And Starr, who wasn't paying much attention, thinks he said, what do you think of this cheesecake? And he says, I'll tell you, Jack, I'd like to eat that right now. Well, I myself, who was standing in the back of the booth, would not have believed this had I not heard it. And Starr still doesn't believe it, because he's looking around totally confused as to why everybody has dropped microphones, why they're rolling around on the upper level, why guys are slapping five, why Miss Cheesecake is even more pleased with herself than usual. You know, it's just a totally, totally extraordinary set of circumstances.
Swing and another foul back into the seats. Well, Swan can't get the third one by him, and Brock can't straighten it out. Do you like cheesecake, Bob Starr?
Oh, I do, and every time I start on one of my diets, it turns out to be National Retail Baker's Week, and they bring us up.
Do you like Miss Cheesecake?
Yes, very much so. I have not had any yet, but it looks good enough to eat. Oh, look at this. Look at this.
Here's the 2-2 delivery and a changeup base hit to center by Brock. Here comes Templeton around to score. The Cardinals lead 1-0. And Brock has a base hit. Hernandez comes up.
Steve Hernandez.
Brock on in first base. He now has 42 hits for the year.
That's Shannon just cackling away there in the background. I mean, he's probably still in his late 20s when all this is going on. He had just really, because of his kidney disease, had his career cut short. Doctor said, you know, you're going to slide someday and you're going to die at second base. You got to stop playing. And so into the broadcast, there he is just laughing. Sounded like me when we're sitting there in Mike Bush's basement getting ready to break into the place. All right, We had Vanna White in the studio for the first time back in 1987. Delightful young woman. Not a real lot going on there, but very, very sweet. That sort of southern thing is from South Carolina. And on this date back in 1990, I was put on display. I didn't realize what was going on until about halfway through the trip. But it was my, I was engaged at the time for the first time, first marriage. Engaged. And my fiance at the time, a lot of her family was from the Boston area. And so I always wanted to see Boston. And so when she suggested that we go on a trip and see all of her relatives in Boston and Cape Cod and Falmouth and all these other places, sure, I'll go because I want to see all those things anyhow. I never saw Fenway Park, typical male perspective. And so we go along. But then I realize, oh, I see what's going on. I'm on display. Look at this, our lovely niece, cousin, whatever it is. She's picked up this guy, and they're going to get married, and let's see if we like him. All right, well, like I said, once I realized what was going on, then I started really laying it on thick, you know. It's like, oh, I see. You're trying to decide if she's made a good choice. All right, I get it now. But it sure was pretty being out on Cape Cod. Sure was pretty. And you get some idea of the perspective of things. Go out on the tip of Cape Cod. It's like a 3.5-hour drive from Boston. I had no idea. I thought Cape, like Boston, here's Cape Cod. Nuh-uh, not at all. Thought I had another baseball story here. Hold on, before we just move on here, let me just check this. Yeah, no, I guess not. Well, anyhow, we got a new month here, and it's June, and here's some things to look forward to in sports. Got the NBA Finals. They get started tomorrow between the Celtics and Golden State. Also, the Stanley Cup playoffs are going. A lot of people pulling for Tampa Bay because of Patrick Maroon. U.S. Open golf, the 122nd one, starts on June 13th. Wimbledon kicks off on June 27th. You get to hear all the reporters mispronounce it by saying Wimbledon. On TV, coverage of the Queen's Platinum Jubilee airs Thursday on CBS. Forget it. Season 3 of The Boys hits prime this Friday. MTV Movie and TV Awards are on Sunday. The new series, Mrs. Marvel, hits Disney Plus June 8th. 75th Annual Tony Awards are on the 12th. Season 4 of Westworld on the 26th. Season 2 of Only Murders in the Building, Netflix, June 28th. In movies, Adam Sandler's basketball flick Hustle shows up on Netflix on June 8th. Jurassic World Dominion, that's on the 10th. A new Toy Story spinoff called Lightyear lands on June 17th. And the big new Elvis biopic opens on June 24th. And you get to hear reporters mispronounce that too and say, a new biopic? You're like, what the hell is a biopic? And they wouldn't be able to answer that because they just sort of made it up. It's a biopic, as in biographical motion picture. Biopic. You know, for all the talk about what a great journalism school the University of Missouri is, and I'm sure it is, and so many of the people who pop up on primarily television, some radio, but almost all television, all came out of that J school at Mizzou. Well, I think that there's a possibility that they're getting a little sloppy over there. Because when you see some of these people who pop up on St. Louis television, it used to be that St. Louis was probably maybe like your third or your fourth job in television. It's like, oh, I'm hitting, getting closer to the big time here. I'm like maybe 25, 26. And now here I am in market number 20 or whatever it was at the time. And I'm starting to make it here. I'm starting to make it. I'm building my career. Here we go. Now, I swear to God, there's a bus that leaves Columbia a couple of times a year and drags these 22-year-old kids with no experience and just throws them on the air. And that's why you get biopic and Wimbledon. And we got some holidays, the big one, Father's Day, also Juneteenth, which are both on the 19th this year. Also, it's Pride Month. Pride Day on the 28th, first official day of summer, 21st. National Donut Day is this Friday. National Best Friends Day is the 8th. June 14th, Flag Day, and National Bourbon Day. National Martini Day is the 19th, and National Selfie Day is June 21st. Some of these things are real stretches. Come on. Oh, here's the other baseball story. Don Mattingly's son, Jordan, arrested in Indiana on Monday after drunkenly crashing his car and then immediately driving it without a tire to a local dealership where he tried to sell it. He's facing multiple charges. Let's talk about cougars. What do you say? If you asked a guy who dates much younger women why he does it, he'd probably say looks, or he would be lying. But maybe that's not the case for women who date younger men. Dating site called CougarLife.com polled its members and asked them to name the top benefits of dating a guy who's 10 years or more younger than them. And the most popular answer was that the guys are more open-minded. Physical attractiveness ranks second, and having a free spirit ranked third, which is basically permission to allow yourself to be a slut for a while. They also asked men to name the top benefits of dating a cougar. Top three answers were they're more emotionally mature, they tend to have more financial freedom, and they're more successful at work. So those two are about money. Top drawbacks to dating somebody who's much older or younger include finding things in common. Your friends have nothing in common, and you probably will be judged for it. I was single for 8 years between marriages, and there was a lot of, shall we say, activity like that. And there's far fewer head games going on, particularly as it relates to sex. And also, the older the woman gets, the more direct, I believe, that they become, particularly about sexual things. They know what they want. They know what satisfies them. They're not afraid to tell you. And there's more of the sort of a let's get to the point thing. I think all those things are good, by the way. First part of Stranger Things Season 4 broke Netflix's record for the biggest premiere weekend for an English language series. 286 million hours of view time, beating out Bridgerton Season 2, which had 193 million. The prison scenes in the new season were filmed at an old prison in Lithuania. And one of the cells there had been converted to an Airbnb, but it might creep you out to know that the place was a Nazi concentration camp during World War II. Yes, it would. Netflix boss Ted Sarandos is defending Ricky Gervais for the anti-trans content in his new comedy special. He says, here's the quote, "We want something for everybody, but everything's not going to be for everybody," end quote. A source claims that Matthew Morrison was fired as a judge on So You Think You Can Dance for sending inappropriate messages to a female contestant. The unnamed contestant allegedly took the messages to the producers after she felt uncomfortable. Back when I was in grade school, it was the sixth grade where my grammar school always had the big spelling bee. And it was a big, big neighborhood event. A lot of women in babushkas from the old country cramming into this little, well, I was going to say hall, but even that word is greatly exaggerated for the size of this place. But it was packed. You know, one of those things where the walls were sweating. And they would wheel out the kids. And it was a foregone conclusion that little Jimmy Corcoran was going to win the spelling bee. I had won every practice round we had. There were like six of them, and I won every single one. And people were like, get ready. Because, you know, that was tuition. That was going to be free tuition for the next year, which I think back then was $300. It was a big deal. That's when the average American income was about $7,000. So $300, you figure it out. It's a lot of money in, what, the early 1960s. I had kids the night of the thing, you know, they had it like 7 o'clock at night, and everybody got all dressed up, and you go out there, and people were congratulating me before the thing even started. As I said, it was a fait accompli. It was just automatic that I was going to go out there and win the whole damn thing. It would be the least surprising event of the year in that school. So they come to me in round two, and the narrator, the person, you know, giving out the words, "Okay, James, your word is exponent." And you know how I always say, don't bring math into it. One must know one's limitations in life, and I know mine, and mine is math. And so at the time, I'm not even really sure I knew what exponent meant. And back then, you didn't get to ask any questions. It was just like, here's the word, spell the fucking word, and we're moving on. All that, could you use it in a sentence, please? What's the derivation of the word? Bullshit. We didn't have any of that. Here's your word. Spell it or don't spell it. We're moving on. So I don't even know what an exponent is. E-X-P-O-N-A-N-T. Ding. You might have known it was something related to math that took me out. And there was an audible gasp in the room because the word had gotten around, as Corcoran kid's pretty good speller. Now you have to sit back down and just sit there completely humiliated, fighting back tears and just total humiliation. And they don't let you leave the stage until the round is completed. And that can be a while. So you're just sitting there and people are staring at you like, oh man, you fucked that up. The Scripps National Spelling Bee semifinals, 7 o'clock tonight on ION? I-O-N? I don't even know if I have that channel. LeVar Burton narrates the spelling bee for us, and the finals are tomorrow night. All right, birthdays today. Spider-Man is 26. Tom Holland. Amy Schumer. Lobert, 41. Brandy Carlile, 41. Alanis Morissette, 48. Heidi Klum, 49. Terry Polo. Ben Stiller's lady and Meet the Parents, Fosters and the Foggers and all that. 53. The son of Sam, David Berkowitz, interestingly being treated as a celebrity here. 69. Ron Wood, Rolling Stones, Hand Faces. 75. Morgan Freeman, I can hardly believe it. 85. Pat Boone, Zit. 88. Sometimes the snow comes down in June. And I remember thinking to myself, it's a really stupid lyric in that song. Oh, yeah? 1843 on this date, Cleveland, Ohio, Buffalo, and Rochester, New York had snow in June. I don't think it's worth writing a song about. Rolling Stones arrived in New York to begin their first American tour on this date 58 years ago. CNN launched 42 years ago. Jack Kevorkian released from prison after serving 8 years of his 25-year sentence, died on this date June 3rd, 2011. Well, that's not this date. Today is the first. Why is that? Never mind. And 84 years ago today, 1938, Superman appeared in the first issue of Action Comics. In 2014, a copy sold for $3.2 million, highest price ever paid for a comic book. And word is out that the restaurant chain Chili's has begun using robot servers. Oh, yeah, because that's the problem with Chili's, the servers. And with that, that is the J.C. Corcoran podcast for June 1st, 2022, 160 days remaining in our American democratic system of government as we have known it. We post a little bit after 7 o'clock every weekday morning. Everything is archived right here. You can email me, JC at jconline.com, Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. I will continue to keep you updated as to our new radio station and all of the new stuff that is going to be happening on St. Louis Radio, of which I will be a part, along with Katie Cruz and Radio Rich and Michelle and everything like that. We're getting closer and closer and closer, so I'll keep you posted. In the meantime, beat this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.